suborbital flights as early as sometime next year. So, you know, I mean, it's just something that's evolving. The Atlas rocket, the Delta IIs and the Delta IVs, everything that NASA has used over the years, are all throwaways. And it wasn't until these new companies, new private companies are coming around that are developing the technology to do that. In fact, the spacecraft that they're in right now, when that comes back 6 months from now, after that mission is over, that spacecraft will refly as well. So everything's reusable except for the second stage at this point. Let me drop it. But what they do with the second stage is they have little jets on there, and they point it in the opposite direction. They slow it down and let it burn up in the atmosphere so that doesn't become space junk. So, you know, it's the wave of the future. Blue Origin, who's developing the new Shepard with the suborbital flight, is also developing a large rocket, just short of the height of a Saturn V rocket called the New Glenn. And their first flight should be at the end of next year. He's got a big, massive manufacturing plant that he set up in Florida, right near Cape Canaveral. A place called Expedition Park, and he's going to have these rockets do the same thing that Elon Musk is doing. It will be coming down on a drone ship as well. So I guess it's the wave of the future. Ken, over to you, and then I'll go back to the other station. Back to you.
Okay. Thank you. I was just curious, I guess, why government and civilian did it differently.
WB3AD.
Yeah, expendable rockets. You know, it was a cheap way to go, as far as they're concerned. Let's go to the other station. EAB, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Ken. I take a slightly different tack. All of those government rockets stuff were always built by private companies. The difference is the government used to do all the top-level design and the top-level integration, and they used to part out stuff to companies, and they put it all together. They've loosened up on that now, and now they have companies taking more of a high-level role. But the parts always were built by private companies, like Grumman built the lunar module, and North American, I think, bought the control module that it was attached to. So, in parallel, they have been developing a way to do this. And I think the key point is you need an incredible amount of high-speed signal processing on the device you're trying to retrieve. And it's only that the computer technology to do it within the weight, size, and other limitations has finally reached the point where they can do it. But I see two parallel but independent paths. Back to Paul.
I agree with you 100%. You know, that was the whole idea of bringing in SpaceX and all these companies. Sierra Nevada is building Dream Chaser. That looks like a small shuttle. But, you know, NASA says, you know, we'll give you some seed money. So it's seed money. We'll give you some seed money and see what you can come up with. Develop something. And then come back to us. And, you know, if we like the design, and, you know, yeah, we'll sign up with you and we'll go that way. And we'll be a customer. Where, you know, when you had Rockwell and Northrop Grumman, well, just Grumman back then, NASA, they designed everything. This is what we want. They go to the company, we want you to build this thing. And then they would have to do it that way. And It's a much different system. From what I see, a much better system. Time marches on. Was there another station that had a comment? No, I don't know. I thought I had another. Okay. Very good. I guess I'll leave it there. I wanted to talk about this one thing. I talked to Wesley about a week or so ago. He brought it up with this Hyperloop system that Elon Musk developed originally, but now he open sourced it. You know, anybody could take his plans and run with it. And Richard Branson, he runs Virgin Galactic and Virgin Orbital, and, you know, he took those plans and he developed this 500 meter long tube, evacuates as much air out of it as possible, and he runs his pod through it, and it's the beginnings of the Hyperloop, you know. So he got it up to 100 miles an hour the other day, and it was pretty cool. You can find it on the internet, I guess. It's a YouTube thing. So that's the story on that. And the other deal I'll cover again maybe next week, but Roy's already got it up on his website. Let me drop it. Is this Mars sample return mission that NASA's now going, they're going to go full blast on this thing now. I can see that, you know, all the politics are over now. I guess they're gonna go that way. It's been on and off. Maybe it could be. And they now have the systems. The Perseverance is now going to land on Mars in February 18th, and eventually it's going to, you know, do a lot of science experiments. But one of the experiments that they're going to do is core bore these samples, and they're going to leave them in, you know, put them in a canister and leave them on the surface, and for our future vehicles to come along and get. So sure enough, they come up with this one idea, and I'll talk about it more next week. But make a long story short, you'll have Perseverance, you'll have this other vehicle that's going to land and try to locate these things where they were left, and then bring them back to, you know, where it landed, and there'll be another part of that vehicle that will launch the samples back to space. European Space Agency is going to have another orbiter around Mars. It's going to dock with that, and that will eventually bring the samples back to Earth. I mean, it's really outrageous, complicated way about going it, but, you know, about getting samples. But I believe it's going to be funded. Anyway, it's on the one idea is on Roy's website. You know, this lander and what this rocket thing is going to look like launching from Mars. Any other last comments before I turn it back to Roy for the end of the net? Well, I'm going to wish those four hams well that are flying around in space right now. So I hope the ham astronauts will successfully get to their destination, the International Space Station, for the next 6 months. With that, thank everybody that listened to me, and we'll turn it back to Roy in the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. Back to you, Roy, AC2GS, WS2F.
AC2GS, thank you very much, Paul, for the space report, and thanks to everyone who participated tonight. As I often say, it's you guys that make the difference between an interesting technical net and me just, talking. So thanks again to everyone who participated tonight. And as always, want to remind people that if you have any questions that you would like to email me, or topics you would like to hear discussed, or if you want me to poke Paul on the shoulder and ask him to take a look at some space video or news report, the email address to get in touch with me is mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ ac2gs.com. Links to some of the images that Paul provided are available on my link page, which is roy.ac2gs.com. And as always, I'd like to remind you that MyKC2NJI maintains an archive of the technical nets that go as far back as September 2006, so please avail yourself of it. There's a lot of very useful information from some very, very clever amateur radio operators who have unfortunately become silent keys. I want to remind everyone, talking about smart guys who became silent keys, I often end these technical nets with a quote from Dick, K2RIW. One form of his closing comment is, was be kind to each other. I think that was a great bit of advice back then and double so now. The virus is alive and well, unfortunately. The numbers are going to climb in the short haul. Please, please act responsibly. Do not make believe it's gone away because it hasn't. Don't be frightened. Don't hide, but be intelligent. And be safe, and I hope to talk to you all next Sunday when we do it all over again. So until then, be safe. This is AC2GS, and I'll be going clear.